Phil Jester at his residence at 8130 Raleigh Place in Thornton,
Westminster,
Colorado. We'll get the legal stuff out of the way. We'll be sending a copy of this tape to the Hall of Fame, but Sabre reserves the right to distribute the tape or transcriptions of the interview to other researchers. Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
If I was a baseball player, I'd be asking for money. But,
Isn't that the truth? Did you have a nickname?
Just Burge.
Just Burge?
Yep.
Were you involved in any famous incidents that you can remember?
Not really. No real famous ones or anything.
Okay. Why don't you tell me about growing up in North Denver?
Well, it's just I grew up with a family of five boys. We were all ball players, and we all played high school ball, and I had two brothers that had chances to go into pro ball, but they spent 4 and 5 years in the Army, so they didn't get to go on. And as soon as I got out of the Navy, I went up to Greeley to school, and then I went in right into pro ball.
So you were up at Northern Colorado?
Uh-huh.
And did you play on the ball club up for the university up there?
No, I helped them coach.
And you were in the Navy?
Uh-huh.
Let's see, you were born in 1927?
27.
Okay, so were you kind of post-World War II? Or?
Well, I got over into Japan just about a month before everything ended over there.
Okay.
And we did a lot of minesweeping over there.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a bit of minesweeping.
Yeah. Did you, once you were at Greeley, you helped coach?
Uh-huh.
And did you have any good ball players up there?
Some of the greatest.
Yeah?
And they went to Omaha a couple of years for the College World Series.
Really?
They had one of the finest coaches up there, and most of the ball players came right from North Denver and from Louisville, Colorado,
mm-hmm.
up in that area.
And who was the coach up there?
Pete Butler.
Mm-hmm. Was he a big league ball player at any time?
I don't think so. I think he played semi-pro, or maybe professional along the way, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a great coach. He got a lot out of the ball players.
Okay, you said you had five brothers?
Four brothers beside myself.
Four brothers. Any sisters?
No sisters.
Oh, boy.
Right.
Well, that must have been quite a handful for the family.
Oh, yeah, it was.
And what was your father's occupation?
He was with the Union Pacific Railroad. Put 50 years in with them.
Great. And how did you become interested in baseball?
Through him, probably, playing as much as he did, and then my older brothers playing like they did. Mm-hmm. I was the fourth of the five. And she must have put it. Now,
oh, that's okay. She's used to being in here. We should have her in here, you know? Oh, she's an affectionate thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good. And you said all your brothers played?
Uh-huh.
Were you on the same team?
No, in high school, the same high school.
And what high school was that?
North High School in North Denver.
Did you play American Legion ball, too?
A lot of American Legion ball, and I don't think one of my brothers, just 2 years older than I am, that went up to Greeley also. He played for Greeley.
Uh-huh.
He played Legion ball, but I don't think either. When my two oldest brothers were gone, I don't think there was Legion baseball in those days.
Uh-huh. So did you have a pretty good ball club?
Oh, yes. We had good ball clubs all the time.
Uh-huh. Did you win any championships?
quite a few championships, and I think, of course, they didn't have really any state tournaments or anything in those days. But we did win city championships, and but that was about it.
Well, that was pretty big back. What year did you graduate?
In 1946.
Uh-huh.
But I went into the Navy in 45,
mm-hmm.
early in 45, and I came back and graduated with the class of 46 because I already had my credits and everything.
Right. That's good. And what positions did you play when you were growing up?
Third base and catch, uh-huh. shortstop. Third base quite a bit most of the time.
Uh-huh. Now, did you pitch?
Very little, and no, not until I got into my, well, into the high school.
Uh-huh.
But I started out really as a third baseman, and I probably should have stayed there.
Were you a pretty good hitter?
I could hit.
Yeah? Did you have a favorite player when you were growing up?
Well, Ted Williams was always my favorite along the way here. I always thought a lot about Ted Williams. He was great.
Oh, yes.
And I don't know, possibly the whole Yankees ball club in those days. I think all kids liked the Yankees.
Yeah. Were they your favorite team?
No, not really. The Giants were.
The Giants?
Uh-huh.
Well, they had some good ball clubs then,
too. Very good ball clubs.
Yeah. What did your family think of you making a career out of baseball?
They really thought it was great because my mother was sports oriented too. She's the one that did most of the playing with us out playing catch with us. She had her own ball club and she played catch with us. And she was a great sportswoman.
Oh, that's great. And I imagine that your father was gone a lot on the railroad?
Oh yeah, all week long and then home on the weekends.
Uh-huh. So she was the one that was really playing ball with you boys.
She was the coach and the manager.
Tell me how you were signed and who signed you.
I don't even remember what the guy's name was from the Boston Braves. He started following me when I was about 14 years old at North, or 15 years old.
Uh-huh.
And then when I got out of the Navy and went up to Greeley, he was always up there, even though I didn't get to play. I suited up for him and coached for him, but
mm-hmm.
that was about it.
And what year were you signed?
In 1940, early in 47.
Mm-hmm. And your minor leagues, what teams did you play for?
Well, my first year, I went to Leavenworth, Kansas. I think in those days, that was Class D or C ball.
Mm-hmm.
Class D, I think. And then went from there to Evansville, Indiana. And from there, 2 years at Denver.
For the Bears?
Uh-huh. And then to Milwaukee. And then from there to the Braves, and from the Braves to Milwaukee again when they changed over in 53.
Mm-hmm. Who were some of your teammates in the minors?
Well, there was a lot of them. Bell Plouse had played quite a bit for the Braves. And Billy Reed, I think he went to the major too.
Yeah.
Bill Queen. Brother of Mel Queen.
Mm-hmm.
The Torrey boys. Well, Torrey's brother played here first base for Denver.
Frank. Frank Torrey?
Played two or three different years with Frank.
Uh-huh. Was he quite a guy?
He was a good ball player. Very good ball player. Good hitter. Good first baseman.
Mm-hmm. And were you a starter or a reliever in the minors?
I started and relieved both.
Both?
All the way through.
That's good. What were some of the ballparks that you played in the minors?
Well, the biggest part of them was, like in Topeka, Kansas, and I think that same year, I'm not sure if Mickey Mantle came in with one of those ball clubs or if it wasn't until C-ball that he came in, because Mickey was about two or three years younger than I am.
Did you pitch against him?
Not until spring training. The main guy I pitched against then was Willie Mays.
Willie Mays.
And Carl Yastrzemski. Carl Yastrzemski was with Louisville in AAA ball, and Willie Mays was with Minneapolis and pitched against a lot of those guys.
Yeah, did you have good success against those fellas?
Not bad that I can remember. It was the guys that choked up that I had trouble with.
Oh.
Choke up to the trademark and hit the opposite field. That's the ones I had trouble with.
What was the date that you entered the big leagues in?
1952.
Mm-hmm. Did you come right out of spring training with the Braves?
Uh-huh. Well, wait a minute. No, I was pitching with Milwaukee, and I think I won 10 straight ball games with them when they pulled me.
Okay. And what do you remember your first day in the big leagues?
First game in the big league was against Philadelphia Phillies that I can remember.
Was it in Boston or Philadelphia?
In Boston.
Yeah?
And I think I pitched one or two innings of relief, and I can't remember the catcher's name then. Hit a home run off of me, and that was the first real big hit I had off me in those days.
Yeah? Let's see, some of the Phillies, Stan Lapata played for the Phillies back then. And
Andy Simnick.
Andy Simnick.
He's the one that hit the home run off me.
Yeah, he was a pretty fair ball player.
Good hitter.
Who were some of your teammates on that Braves team?
Well, Walker Cooper was the catcher.
Mm-hmm.
Earl Torgerson, first baseman. And Sibby Sisti, second base. John Logan, shortstop. And I think when I first went to the Braves, I think Willard Marshall was there.
Uh-huh.
And then they sold him to the Giants, I think it was. And then Sid Gordon played third base for a while before Ed Matthews went to third base. Sid Gordon and Sam Jethro and Jack Daniels.
Yeah.
I can't remember too many of those other outfielders. I know they were loaded up with pitchers all the time.
Yeah? Who were some of the pitchers? Warren Spahn?
Warren Spahn, and I think by then, I think Sane was already gone. I think they traded him or sold him.
Right, he went to the Yankees.
Yeah, from spring training.
Yeah.
Vern Bickford.
Mm-hmm. He was a big fellow, wasn't he?
Not really that big. About 6'1", and probably weighed 190. Max Surcot was the big one.
Oh, that's the guy I was thinking of.
Max was about 6'1", 6'2", and weighed 255. Yeah. Big. George Estock.
Mm-hmm. Who was the manager?
What was his name? Helms or?
No. Then Charlie Grimm came in?
Charlie Grimm.
How did they all treat you?
Very well. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
And your teammates were a good group of fellas?
Yeah, they were all a good bunch.
Yeah.
Real good bunch. got along with them all real fine, and they were all helpful.
Now, what was it like being in the same town with the Red Sox?
Well, that was funny. We had a pretty good ball club, and we'd play Brooklyn in Braves Field, and we'd maybe get 16,000, 18,000. We'd leave town, and the Yankees would come in against the Red Sox, and they'd fill their ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really a Red Sox town.
Yeah.
It wasn't really a Braves town.
No. That year, you drew some pretty small crowds, too.
Oh, yeah, very. I don't know. I think there were times when we had 700, 800, 900 in there, and not even up to 1,000, I don't think.
No, my goodness.
But we weren't winning either with the ball club we had. We weren't really winning either. So I think we were down 6th or 7th place of the ball club. So you couldn't really blame people for not coming out there.
Yeah. Did you have a core group of fans that you saw a lot?
No, not really. I know in those days we used to stop after the ball game and stand out there for an hour or two and sign autographs. We didn't get on the bus or run off in Boston. Of course, we had our own cars and our own neighborhoods to drive to. So most of us would stand out there for an hour or two and sign autographs.
That was nice.
So
it's hard to get modern players to do that.
Well, the biggest part of them won't do it anymore.
No.
Well, they really don't have time like we had probably. They run them through so many things, batting practice, infield practice, and after the ball games, they've got their families waiting for them to go, and they just don't take the time to do it.
Now, Ed Matthews said in a book about the Milwaukee Braves, he said he thought that the modern players might be better, you know, bigger and better than the older players, but they don't have near as much fun as you have. Would you agree with that?
Definitely. We had fun, and I don't think we really thought about playing for the money then either. It was playing for the fun of it, and playing, and even though we lost all the time, we wanted to win just as bad as anybody else did.
Mm-hmm.
But I think these guys today are bigger, stronger probably, but I don't think they... they're not as team conscious as we were. My gosh, I can remember getting a line drive and my thumb pushed back, and I still pitched and finished the ball game. And that thumb was swollen up, and I probably hurt my arm pitching with that way. But I didn't want to come out of the ball game.
Right.
Yeah, it's just like... where I started to see the difference in ball players was like Canseco.
Uh-huh.
Big man, all the tools in the world, and it seemed like if he'd break a fingernail or get a scratch on an arm or something, he'd sit out for a couple of games. I don't know.
That's true.
I always wished I had been that big and with the tools that they had.
Yeah. What type of pitcher were you?
You know, mostly fastball, and then I started throwing the sinker and sinker ball pitcher mostly, and control pitcher. I hardly walked in too many batters.
Right. Were you a good fielder?
Well, I consider myself to be about like Maddox is today.
Really?
Maddox or Smoltz.
Wow. Then you were a good fielder.
I could field my position, and I always trained myself to end upright, to be set for line drives or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I did one time catch one from, well, when I beat Philadelphia 1-0 one ball game, I got a line drive that right here. And
that is a good thing you caught that one.
Oh, yes.
That would have hit you right in the face.
Well, I had Ted Lazowski hit one through me that hit me in the cup and ended up out in center field.
Oh, my.
Oh, we used to try to pitch Ted Lazowski outside to make him hit to center field or to left field. You know, those days, those outfields were pretty large-sized outfields. We tried to get Ted Lazowski to hit the other way instead of pulling the ball or hitting through the middle, what he always did.
Yeah. So. Who else did you pitch against that you remember?
The old Ralph Kiner. Ralph hit a couple of home runs off me. And Stan Musial, Deathhole Ball Club.
Yeah.
Enos Slaughter was one of the toughest guys I ever pitched against. Very tough. Very good hitter.
Yeah, well.
I didn't really have that much trouble with Musial.
Uh-huh.
I suppose he got his hits here and there, and I probably got him out a few times. Solly Hemus bothered me, a choke-up hitter, and hit over third base, left-handed hitter, hit over third.
Mm-hmm.
Ashburn was the same way, choke up and hit over third base off of you.
Well, a lot of those guys are in the Hall of Fame now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very good ball players.
Real good ball players. What was your pitching motion like? Could you describe that?
Well, mostly three quarters. And I didn't just throw from there. Sometimes I threw from straight over the top two, and then sometimes I came up with a change-up thrown from down underneath,
mm-hmm.
a lot like Reed does now.
Like Steve Reed. Where was the Braves and spring training? Yeah.
What was that place down in Florida? I can't even remember the names anymore. But it was down in Florida.
Florida?
Uh-huh.
What kind of instruction did you receive down there?
Well, it was mostly just your basic, going through your basic trainings. As a pitcher, you were going through your backing up plays,
mm-hmm.
covering first base when ball was hit to the right side. A big part of it was just backing up plays.
Mm-hmm. Did they give you any specialized pitching instruction?
Not really. But the biggest training I got for pitching, and that was after I went down to Atlanta, was from Whitlow Wyatt.
Uh-huh. And who was he?
He pitched many years for the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Uh-huh.
One of their better pitchers on the Dodgers ball.
And he was a manager?
Or? At Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the Southern Association.
And during the regular season, did you receive any instruction?
Not really. You didn't have pitching coaches. You didn't have batting coaches.
Mm-hmm.
About the only thing we would do is the pitchers would sit down and talk. And we didn't really keep notes like they do today.
Right.
The biggest thing we'd have is clubhouse meetings and go over hitters. And I don't think we really kept too many notes or... And when I was pitching, I really didn't know who the hitters were up there. I didn't even look at the hitters. I just looked at the catcher. And when you had a big catcher like Walker Cooper, and if you didn't, if you'd shake off Cooper too much, he'd tell you, let's get going, watch my glove, and get some guts out there.
Yeah. Well, he was a big guy.
Yeah, he was about 6'5", and weighed about 250, 245.
Yeah.
And he was a heck of a catcher. Good catcher to throw to. And then they had Paul Burris there that was mm-hmm. a very good catcher. And Paul didn't get to catch that much. He was just sort of more or less a bullpen coach, the mm-hmm. catcher.
And is that the Paul Burris that ended up here in Denver?
No.
No.
No. Paul was always back east there, and I don't think he played ball much.
Okay.
Most of his minor league days were back there, too, through Hartford, probably, and in Milwaukee.
Uh-huh.
In the Braves.
What was your favorite big league park?
Well, I like Brooklyn myself. I pitched two or three. Well, I won the last game of the season in 52 there. And I pitched relief three or four times in there.
Uh-huh.
I liked that ballpark.
Yeah.
And I thought, I liked Wrigley Field. I think I pitched maybe one or two innings there, and that was about it.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a great ballpark. And I don't remember, like today, they talk about the wind blowing so much all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't remember in those days the wind blowing like that.
Right. Did you, what was your thoughts of Braves Field?
I thought that was a good field. You know, when you first go to the big leagues, any field you played in was top class.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I thought of Braves Field. I thought, boy, this is great to even get to play in front of even 18,000, 20,000 people, 15,000 people. So, especially when you come out of the minor leagues and you're playing in front of maybe 2,000 or 3,000 every night.
Yeah. Well, was it in good repair, Braves Field?
I thought so. I thought it was real good repair.
Good.
Good playing field.
Mm-hmm. And where did you live in Boston?
Boy, I can't even remember that now.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That's where.
Yeah. Well, that's a long time ago, really.
Yeah.
Almost 50 years. Do you remember any of the umpires?
Hardly at all.
Yeah?
There's, I think, a few of them just got through just the last maybe 5 or 6 years with, you know, being elderly and
mm-hmm.
being up in their 60, 65 probably. I don't know if they made them quit when they were 65 mm-hmm. or not.
Did you ever get thrown out of a game?
No.
No?
I did in the minor leagues one time in the Bear Stadium.
And what happened?
You know, just getting on the umpire about, and that's the only time I ever really got on umpires, about balls and strike counts. And, well, I don't think I got thrown out for that either. I was playing Denver against Des Moines. And I can't, what was the big catcher's name for them? He went up to the Cubs. I had a third strike called on me that come inside, about got me on the chin, and it was called a strike, and I turned around, and the catcher was laughing, and I started questioning the umpire about it, and I marked a line inside, and he said, "That's it, you're out."
And that was over here at Bear Stadium?
Uh-huh.
And they're about ready to tear that down now.
Right.
Yeah.
I've even got something that a lot of people don't have on that either.
Oh! Little.
That's what the ball field looked like before they got the stands there.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever went down to the ball game there before they.
Yeah, I remember they had just expanded it this way, but this was still open.
Well, they had the seats all the way down this way.
Mm-hmm.
But people used to sit on that grass hill up there.
Yeah, that was before I came. They had just expanded the seats out through here, but I remember sitting right right along here.
And of course, they had the stands here in right field, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which became the south stands.
What they call it, the mean stands, the south stands.
Yeah. Yeah, that's quite an old ballpark. A lot of good players passed through there.
A lot of them. A lot of the Yankees, big-name Yankee ball players went through there.
Yeah. Billy Martin and them. He was a manager for the Bears.
And he was the manager for the Bears. I was even a backup umpire for the Bears if they had somebody missed a flight or got sick or whatever. I was umpiring high school and college baseball. I was a standby umpire down there. You know, I had a few run-ins with Billy Martin. Of course, I've known him for many years.
Yeah, did you play against him?
And then after I got out of pro ball, I had a semi-pro ball club down at Burlington, Colorado.
Oh, did you?
And Billy Martin, I think, was up at Fort Warren at that time. So
you played against him there, too?
Uh-huh.
That's neat. Now, were you in spring training with the Braves when everything started to move for Boston to move to Milwaukee?
Uh-huh.
What was that like?
That was, it just made you wonder what was going on. Of course, I knew what Milwaukee was like, but we played in the old Borchardt Field.
Mm-hmm.
Where they had a new ballpark then. And I don't know what they called that field.
Then. County Stadium?
County Stadium, probably.
And you had a pretty good year in 52 with the Braves.
Right.
But then I was looking at your statistics. You didn't pitch much with the Braves in 53.
I had a good spring training.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know where they come up with that 22 earned run average, because I never had that many innings pitched. I think I pitched one or two innings against St. Louis, and it was snowing and cold that day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I pitched one inning against the Cubs, and I don't know where all of those runs come from to have a 22.
Yeah.
I'd sure like to look into that someday and see where that came from.
Well, I'll check into that too. Some of the old box scores if they have them.
I can remember the big first baseman, Belko.
Yeah, Steve Belko, yeah.
Hit a home run off me with a couple men on base. And I knew I was going to go back to Toledo by then anyhow, because Bob Buell was coming out of the service.
Uh-huh.
And I was the only pitcher on the ball club that had any options left. And I knew as soon as Bob Buell was coming out of service, he was a Charlie Grimm's boy down at Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was in the Southern Association League at that time. And then Buell went into the service. Of course, Buell could throw 100 miles an hour.
Right.
And because that's all I heard talk from Grimm and all the coaches was Bob Buell come down to service and he would join the pitching staff. So I knew I was gone.
So you knew your days were numbered there.
Oh, yeah. Then I went down to Toledo and I did have a sore arm from that pitching in that cold at St. Louis. And I went down there, and I think I lost about eight or nine straight ball games at Toledo before I started winning.
Mm-hmm.
And then in those days, when you had a sore arm, you just kept pitching anyhow. You didn't go in for MRIs or anything else.
Right. You just kept going. How did you know that your baseball career was over?
Well, after my second year at Toledo, I went down to Atlanta And I didn't pitch much down there because they had their pitching staff really all set up.
Mm-hmm.
And then that fall or the spring, I got a contract for Evansville, Class B ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no way. My days are over.
Yeah.
And I wanted to spend more time with my family. I had the four kids growing up, and
right.
I wanted to spend more time with them. And I think being gone so long like I was, this is what caused the split between my first wife and I.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it just, in which happened to a lot of baseball players. So.
Yeah.
Being gone so many years, spring trainings, and of course my family joined me up in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we went to Milwaukee, I wasn't there long enough for them to come up there.
So that they just kind of stayed. Did you live here in Denver in the off season?
And the kids were going to school in the Denver schools, and
yeah.
We didn't want to take them out of the schools.
So, what do you think the adjustment was like from playing baseball to more of a regular civilian life for you?
That wasn't hard for me at all. I had a job all set when I came out.
Uh-huh.
I'd been in the meat business before, well, during my baseball days. And I just came right out and went back to that. And then, from the meat business, so my gosh, I carried a milk route for 10 years. It was a great job. With your own boss and
mm-hmm.
outside all the time.
When the ball team traveled, how did they travel? By train or?
Train and buses.
Yeah? And how did you like that traveling?
Well, you had to like it. That was the mode of traveling.
Yeah.
We never did really start flying on planes until, well, my second year with the Bears.
Uh-huh.
Then they used to get the little airlines, the little Western Airlines, mm-hmm. I think it was. And sometimes that was scary.
Yeah, I bet it was.
Some of the wind shears and everything that you ran into coming into the Denver area, and people didn't realize.
Yeah.
Those smaller planes, little prop planes, the way they got buffeted around up in that air. So it was scary sometimes there, but and then some of the buses through the lakes we had buses uh-huh. break down on the highways and near misses of head-on collisions and
oh my.
Remember engines burning and throwing dirt on the engine to put out the fire. And
when you were in the bigs, what did you and the Braves do when you were traveling on the trains, and then when you got to the places, who did you room with?
The biggest part of the time I roomed with Ed Matthews, and I roomed with George Crow, big mm-hmm. Negro first baseman.
Right.
I roomed with him quite a bit. And a left-handed pitcher by the name of Hoover.
Okay, yeah. What was Ed Matthews like as a roommate?
Good roommate, good person, good man.
Mm-hmm. He just passed away this year.
Yep, he just passed away, and Bob Buell just passed away, and my gosh, and then that manager for the Giants passed away right after them, not
yeah.
soon after those guys did.
Yeah. What was George Crow like?
Great, great person.
Now, he had played in the Negro Leagues.
Right.
What did he think of now playing in the major leagues?
He thought it was all great.
Yeah?
He was a good ball player, and he never did ever get a break with the Braves.
And why was that?
I don't know. I just don't know. I would believe it was because of one man owned the ball player, and that was the owner.
Yeah.
Whatever he and the general manager decided on, that was it.
Uh-huh.
No free agency. I believe in those days, if we had had free agency, a lot of us could have even gone to other ball clubs.
Yeah. Now, George Crow and Sam Jethro were some of the first black players to play in Boston. In fact, the Red Sox didn't integrate till 59
was their first year, but
yeah.
George Crow, and then they had a shortstop by the name of Clarkson.
Mm-hmm.
Big shortstop, big.
Yeah.
And he took Johnny Logan's place.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know what it was with there that they just, the Braves ball club just didn't care for him.
Yeah.
And he was one heck of a hitter. He could hit a ball about as far as anybody you ever saw.
Yeah. Did the black ball players experience any prejudice on the field or when you traveled?
When we traveled, when we left spring training the one year, we came up through playing the Dodgers, and of course they had four or five ball players by then, black
yeah.
ones, and we had George Crow and we had Clarkson, I think was out there then, Sam Jethro, and another Louis Marquez.
Uh-huh.
I guess he was more Puerto Rican, but he was still a black ball player.
Yeah.
But we went into Louisville, and they couldn't get into the same hotel, couldn't eat in the restaurants.
Yeah, that
was awful tough on them.
Uh-huh. Now, when you were rooming with George Crow, did he tell you any stories of his time in the Negro Leagues?
George didn't like to talk that much. He was just a good, solid man.
Yeah.
Great man. And he had a great wife. George was a light-colored black guy, and his uh-huh. wife, you would think, was a white Hollywood starlet.
Oh, really?
She was black, but she was white.
Uh-huh.
Beautiful woman, and their kids were about the same way, light-colored, and those two spent a lot of time with their kids. That was all they did. Mm-hmm. When it wasn't on the ball field, they spent all their time with those kids.
That's a good thing. Great thing.
And George was good man on the ball field. Great.
Yeah. He could hit. He could hit.
Well, he could hit, and he could feel, too. Every once in a while, if it was cold, he would have a little rough time fielding, because I don't know, uh-huh. he must... Must have had trouble with his hands getting cold.
Yeah.
When it was cold, his left hand was always in his back pocket. And he might get a line drive or something hit at him, but
yeah.
he was still a great fielder.
Now, Ed Matthews, that was his rookie year too.
Right.
And did you have any inclination that he was going to be as great as he was?
The first year?
Yeah.
No. He did hit some long home runs that first year,
mm-hmm.
but the second year he came into spring training and he looked like he had been lifting weights all winter. And some of the home runs he hit that second year were unbelievable.
Yeah. And then you knew that he was going to be something special.
You knew it then. And he was a great defensive ball player on third base.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he played left field for quite a bit of time too. And then came in on third base. But you could tell that he was going to be one of the great hitters in baseball.
And he turned out to be
one
of the all-time greats. And was he a good fellow?
Yeah, yes. You know, you probably have it today, too. You have your cliques
mm-hmm.
that certain ball players hang with. Well, I don't know, Ed being the great hitter that he was, he stayed with some of the older guys were the great hitters too.
Like Sid Gordon and...
Well, not really Sid Gordon, but maybe with Earl Torgerson and with John Logan.
Now, John Logan was a good ball player.
Yes, he was.
He could field and hit.
He wasn't, I would say, about a 260, 270 hitter.
Uh-huh.
But great on shortstop.
Yeah.
He was like Grote with Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh.
Grote wasn't that great of a hitter either. But great shortstops.
Yeah.
Jack- and, well, we had Pete Wisnett in the outfield up there, them too.
Yeah.
And Pete and Matthews hung around quite a bit together.
Jack Dittmer was your second baseman?
Jack Dittmer was there the second year, but Sibby Sisti was there the first year.
Uh-huh. And he was a pretty good second baseman, would you say?
Just a good your utility ball player that would play anywhere in the infield, play the outfield. Mm-hmm. Impossible. He's still living, as far as I know.
Uh-huh. That's, do you know where Sibby is now?
Up there still, up in...
Milwaukee?
No, up in New York, New Jersey, up in that area where he's always lived.
Oh, okay. Describe the differences in the equipment then as in now.
Well, the equipment I would think would be mostly in the catcher's equipment. Better chest protectors, your shin guards, the smaller chest protector, and your... Now, like you're going to the hockey mask, which I think is great. That hockey mask is, allows that catcher to be able to throw. Where with that, just that single band round here, the catchers would throw, and that thing would be off on the side of their head.
That's
true. Gloves, the outfield gloves, my gosh, they were just regular size, what, 9-10 inch gloves in there. Mm-hmm. What do they say? They're about 16 inch
gloves.
Yeah,
now they have the big gloves.
Those guys jump up to that high wall and stick that glove up above the wall.
What do you think of the differences in the uniforms?
I think they're great.
Yeah?
I think baseball needed that instead of that, just that plain white and gray and all this different color and everything else. I guess the guy for Oakland had a lot to do with the...
Charlie Finley?
Change of colors, and I think even the old Houston didn't like their orange, but I liked it. It drew people in.
Mm-hmm.
People liked the different colors. I like this color that the Rockies have.
Yeah.
It's purple and black and white. It's
it's nice. Do you go out to Coors Field much?
Maybe once or twice a year.
Uh-huh.
I just soon sit at home and watch it on television. I can see everything.
Yeah.
Down there, I don't know. My eyes have gotten to the place where I can't see the ball until it gets to the outfield.
Uh-huh.
And sitting in, out in right field stands up in the second deck, I used to be able to see the pitches going in where you could tell whether it was a ball or a strike.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't hardly even see that anymore. Even though my eyes aren't that bad, but it's just the light in your stadiums and everything. In the light during the days. But the ball hit up at home plate. I can't see it until it gets to the outfield.
What were the clubhouses like back then?
Small.
Small?
Dirty. They weren't real big, small, and of course they never put much money into the clubhouses.
Yeah, not like today.
No. most of that money went out on the field to take care of the grass and the stands probably up above.
Yeah. Did the reporters come into the clubhouse?
Yes, quite a bit.
Do you remember any of them?
No.
No? Okay.
Most of those guys are probably gone by now, too. Yeah. Probably deceased. Yeah. And
That might well be.
The only one that I can remember right now is this one down here, Frank Haraway, for the...
Mm-hmm.
And Frank's been around for years
forever.
And years and years.
Yeah. The Sabre chapter here in town is called the Frank Haraway chapter.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Frank was always a nice guy. I always liked him. And I think he's had a couple of wives passed away.
Oh,
he had one beautiful wife. When I was playing with the Braves, he had one beautiful wife that... Oh, she, I don't know, cancer or whatever. She passed away, and she was a real fine person. She used to be out that ballpark with Frank all the time and help him along. And good person.
He is a good person. Did you get a signing bonus when you signed with the Braves?
$2,100, I think it was.
That's pretty good money back then.
In those days, it was. Yeah. A lot of guys didn't get any kind of signing bonuses. Now, I don't... Don Carlson, I used to pitch against him quite a bit in high school. Now, Cole Jones signed him. Whether he got any kind of bonus or not, I don't know. I never talked to him about a bonus.
Did you get meal money on the road?
Probably about $6 a day for three meals, and that included your money for your laundry.
Oh, really? Did you ever get cheated on a contract?
No, I don't think so. I just, when they said, I wrote back a couple of years and told them I didn't like the contract, and they told me, well, if you don't like it, stay home. We got more people that can take your place.
Yeah. So you signed it.
So you signed.
Yeah.
This is what I say, big difference in baseball from then and today. I think there's a lot of guys who were great ball players that didn't get real great money in those days either. And I know when I was playing for the Braves, Warren Spahn was only making that first year $28,000, I think it was.
Yeah.
And to me, Warren Spahn is probably one of the great, great left-handers that's ever been in the game.
Yeah, that's for sure.
From what I see today, these guys get paid $2-3 million a year and can't even get the ball over the plate.
No, they can't.
Of course, they've got to blame this on so much expansion. There's not enough good ball players go around for every ball club to have good pitchers. And near every ball club this year that I can see of are having pitching problems, even the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah, even the Braves this year.
The Yankees, they have their pitching problems.
Yeah. It seems every team nowadays has pitching. If you were around now, you'd make...
Well, that's what, you think.
Yeah.
You think about it, what you could do probably today, but
yeah.
You don't know.
Yeah.
Of course, you got to bring in injuries and everything, and that's one change in baseball that I've seen. I don't understand how come shortstop, second baseman, third baseman all have rotator cuff problems. My gosh, unless they're not in shape.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can think of.
Did, when you were... coming up, did you throw a lot when you were a kid?
All the time, every day.
Do you think the kids now, like I go around and I don't see the kids throwing at all, out in the parks or...
We used to throw all the time, and we used to, I don't know if you ever heard of it, you probably did, burnout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, playing burnout. See how hard you could throw it to the...
A couple of you would get... say 100 feet apart, and We had a third baseman at North High School, a guy by the name of Don Evans. He played football up at CU, kicker for CU. He could throw hard. And he and I used to like burn out every day, stand there for maybe a half hour, 45 minutes, and throw hard.
Yeah. You think that helped your arm strength?
Yes, very much.
And nowadays you don't see the kids out there doing that.
No. And the biggest thing I see when I go down to ballparks, I don't know if they allow it or not, you don't see the pitchers running across the outfield.
No, you don't.
And I don't know if they maybe...
do it before the fans get there, or...
Well, I've even been down there during batting practice in infield, and you may see one pitcher maybe loping, but they don't run hard like we used to.
Yeah.
You start at the right field line and run hard, good wind sprints to center field, and then walk maybe to left field, and then from there wind sprint back to center, and then walk. But you'd be out there for an hour doing that.
Yeah. Would you do that almost every day?
Every day.
Every day. Well, that's a difference in training methods that they have now.
And of course they don't allow it anymore, playing pepper.
Yeah.
I think pepper was a good build up for stamina and for pitchers especially.
I
think that was great. And I think, I don't know if they play pepper underneath the stands or what, but I know they say now that it would tear up the grass on the infields. And
yeah. I agree with you. I think that's a good game to play.
That was a great game. And everybody, you know, you'd get six or eight guys along that line, and this has helped, to me, that helped with your relationships, too, with your other ball players on your ball club.
And you would even do that in the big leagues.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever discuss salary with players like they do today?
No.
No.
Nope.
I didn't think that you would. Were you superstitious at all?
No, not one bit. And I used to like to pitch against guys that were superstitious. And of course, now they'd stop at the quick pitching. I pitched against guys that would reach in their pocket for a touch of metal or something in their pocket. And while they were reaching, I'd let go. So, as long as they were in the box.
Yeah. Were any of your teammates superstitious?
Oh, yeah, I saw a lot of them superstitious. Warren Spahn was superstitious.
What would he do?
Well, the way he'd put on his socks and shoes sometimes, the way he'd put his hat on his head. Warren was a very nervous guy until he threw the first pitch of the ball game, and then...
then he was fine.
There was nobody in any better.
Yeah. Well, he was, you know, from my point of view, the greatest left-handed pitcher ever to play.
Well, from a couple of the guys I saw, he, Harvey Haddix.
Yeah.
Whitey Ford didn't throw as hard as Spahn and Haddix. Whitey Ford was more, say, like Bohannon.
Just kind of a light tosser that had good control.
Good control, different speeds of curveballs.
What number did you wear with the Braves?
I think three or four different numbers.
Yeah?
23, I think I was.
In Boston?
One time. And I think I had number 42, I think. And if somebody had asked for a certain number, well, I didn't mind giving up the number. For it didn't matter to me. The numbers didn't
so
throw the ball over the plate.
They would just assign you a number?
Yep. And that was it.
Do you have an all-star team that you would put of guys that played, that you played with?
Well, I think so, probably.
Yeah.
I would start out with Campanella catching. Campanella, to me, was one of the greatest catchers I ever saw.
You can't go wrong there.
And Bill, people wouldn't agree with me, but I always liked Gil Hodges on first base. He was, for a big man, he was a great fielder, mm-hmm. and he was a good hitter.
Yeah.
And second base, I suppose, Shane Deist.
Yeah.
Shortstop. One year I went to spring training, I think Marty Marion was still playing shortstop for the Cardinals. But the shortstop, I would say, probably Pee Wee Reese.
Mm-hmm.
And third base, Whitey Karoski. Whitey, to me, was a great third mm-hmm. baseman, great hitter. In the outfield, I liked Jimmy Pearsall. I think he was one of the great ones. Dominic DiMaggio. Ted Williams.
Yeah, Ted Williams. Did you ever get to play against Ted?
Yep, down spring training. Great man. Everybody thought he was a hot dog or whatever. But he was a good man.
Yeah.
He would speak to all the young guys.
I guess that was quite a thrill, getting to speak to him for the first time.
Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah.
And to just watch him hit.
Yeah.
And to me, today, I don't think anybody compares to him hitting. Nobody.
Yeah? Well, he worked at it.
Well, it just makes you wonder the 4 or 5, 6 years he lost in the service,
yeah.
what he would have
what
done.
What he could have done. Yeah, he would have been up there with Aaron and in terms of home runs and who knows how many hits.
He and Mickey Mantle probably would have been in the same class if Mickey Mantle hadn't had leg problems.
Mm-hmm. If you owned a ball club today, who would you pick as your manager and why?
That would be tough.
Yeah.
Because the managing has changed so much. All it is anymore is get 5 or 6 innings out of your starting pitcher and then your 2 or 3 middle pitchers and your...
Yeah.
It would be hard to pick a manager. I always liked Walter or Alston.
Walter Alston, yeah. Well, he's quality. How is the game different today than it was back then? The pitching that you just mentioned.
Yeah, the pitching and I don't know. I don't think there's that much individualism.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think there was really in those days either. Some ball club you might find individualism.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had problems with that with the Rockies last year, or 2 years ago, with both Bichette and Walker.
Yeah.
I think there was a little...
Yeah, I'd agree with you there.
But to me, Walker is right today is the greatest ball player playing right now if he wasn't injured all the time.
Yeah.
I can't call him the greatest because he plays 80, 85 games a year.
Yeah.
But... ball player wise, he's the greatest, I think. I've never seen anybody can run the bases like he does. He's a great hitter. Yeah. He's got a great arm. He knows how to play the outfield.
He's fun to watch, that's for sure.
I've never seen a man go from home to second base as quick as he does.
Yeah.
An outfielder bobbles just a little bit, and he's sitting on second base.
He's there. I agree with you. Do you have a biggest thrill or a favorite memory from your playing days?
No, not really.
Okay.
Because I didn't get any more than a half a cup of coffee. That's what they always call it.
Yeah.
You got a cup of coffee, I got a half a cup, I guess. Didn't even get time to put cream in it.
And if you could change one thing about your baseball career, what would that be?
Probably not sit in beer joints after ball games and drink beer. I didn't do much of that, but I did do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think your place is going home with your family and drinking at home.
Yeah. Did you sit around with the ball players?
Quite a few of them just sitting. Spend your afternoons after ball games. If you played daytime games, then after that you just sit. We didn't have really that many night games.
Mm-hmm.
But sit and drink too much beer. I didn't do that much of it, but I did too much of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be the main, I've always told myself, I shouldn't have been doing that so much.
Yeah.
And they talk about Mickey Mantle and Martin and those guys, and Lopat and Whitey Ford and those guys doing that. Well, that's, you don't have much else to do unless you were a movie theater.
Uh-huh.
Guys go to movie theaters all day and all night long. And I didn't like, if I went into a movie theater, I'd sit there and go to sleep and never see. I'm still that way. I don't go to theaters.
Well, good.
That would be the main thing, is just the imbibing of alcohol. And I couldn't call myself an alcoholic like a lot of ball players. And I saw a lot of ball players were close to alcoholics, maybe alcoholics, but were great ball players.
Mm-hmm.
They could go out there and still play great ball.
Yeah. Do you have anybody that was in the game with you that you're still in contact with?
Not really too much. The only one that I've talked to is Jack Daniels, he's the head of the sports, a lot of the sports stuff in Evansville, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And he's come through here a few times and called and didn't have enough time to come out and sit down and talk or anything.
Yeah.
And I always felt bad for him because he lost a leg in an automobile accident.
Oh, did he? Is that what ended his career?
No. No, he lost that after he was out of baseball.
Yeah, sounds like he kept going, though.
He kept going.
Good.
Of course, the one guy that I roomed with so many years in the minor leagues, Dick Hoover, the left-handed pitcher, was on the Columbus, Ohio Police Department. And he and his wife used to go down spring training every year, and he got killed in an automobile accident down there. Some guy ran a red light and hit him.
Well, that's sad.
And killed him, and his wife called about once. She comes through with her second husband, who comes through and calls and stays in touch.
That's nice. Well, thank you for your time. I think we'll conclude the interview, and then thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate it, and I hope it can help you out.
Well, it will. Thank you.